All right. Hello and welcome. Hey, thanks for joining us. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about what to visit about or talk about this past week. You know, do we talk about the attack of the unknown virus? Do we talk about the fact that the market is maybe finally having a little bit of a correction? All those things that that seem like noise. And then lo and behold, a couple times this week, people talked about that they had been out of the market since 2008. And this isn't about if you did that to make you feel bad. This is about all of us learning and thinking about where we are right now. Right now. Because where we are right now, it's real easy to go, we're up 30%, I don't like what's going on with impeachment stuff, I don't like this here, I don't like that there, I read this article over here about how this person who called 2008, although like a stopwatch called it, you know, has never been positive about the market for 30,000 points, okay? That's the reality of these clowns. But for some reason, people listen to them. They read them. I don't know if they necessarily listen. And if you're negative, you never get discredited for being a fool. It's only positive fools. So it just got me thinking about that and thinking about how serious a problem this is, about trying to time something. People made a decision in early 2009. And late 2008. They made a life-changing decision. They either stayed with their investment or they left. And the difference in valuations is staggering. It's not close. We're up more than fourfold from then. So, the $400,000 that you have in a 401k is a game changer when it's $1.6 million for people. And the only way that that's there is not by timing the market, ever. So I don't know why we have this discussion time and time and time and time again. It's not just me, believe me. I know you're going to buy and put it away, blah, blah, blah. I get that. Do we? Money flows say we don't ever get it. We still get worried about something that doesn't matter. Price movement. Doesn't matter. People are afraid of something that has created more wealth than anything else on the planet, has outperformed every other investment by so far, and requires no management. Yeah, but the market scares me. Get it? I don't get it, but I get it. Okay? It can be hard for some people. But this is where we sometimes have to come in as adults and say, okay, that's hard. Get over it. Right? You don't want to brush your teeth? Okay. You're going to do it anyway. You don't want to eat your green beans? You're going to do it anyway. Because once we start on it, it's okay, but why we go through this exercise all the time and trying to guess what the market's going to do? Well, it's okay, you know, we're up 30% over the past year. That's true. Where's the top? Well, maybe it's right now. Maybe it's a little higher, but I'm out. It's okay. I missed the next couple percent. It's all right. Okay, when do you get back in? Well, you know, a little correction. Like what? 3%? 5%? Because once we get down 3 to 5, it's most certainly going to look like it's going to go 10, right? Always does. And if you get down to 10, so you know it's worse. And then all of a sudden, you're really tuned in, right? You're watching that CNBC and Fox Business. You're watching really close. Really close. Because what you want is a whole giant fire hose of data coming at you. And what you also need on top of that is a fire hose of people talking about pretending that they've been bearish through this entire correction. They got it right. Nailed it. The parade begins. And then, boom, just like December last year, if you're down even more than that, with some tech stocks down 30 to 40%, you know, the ones you always said, if I could get Amazon and Google and Facebook down at a good bargain level, I'd be all over that. Except we don't. Again, money flows say, no. It's not anecdotal evidence. We have evidence every week. How much money flowed into the market when it went down 10%? None. It went out. How about down 15? No, that went out. We don't do it. And so the idea that we're actually trying to think about, well, the market's pretty high. So what do you do? What do you do? Well, if you need money out over the next 5 years, meaning, hey, I'm taking income. I want this income to last the rest of my life. Do you sell out? Yes and no. You sell out some what you need, but that's not a market timing decision. The market has given you a big gift, and you reload your reservoir. Maybe even another year's worth of income. It's a gift. 30%, here you go. Scrape a little bit, put it in the reservoir for future use. Not for future reinvestment. Well, you know, but I'm, you know, I've done really well in my 401k. I was thinking of, you know, like going to sidelines for a little while. Deadly. Dangerous. Deadly. I mean, I would never tell somebody, you know, what you ought to do is just try crack one time. Just once. You know, just so you know. Why? It's horribly addictive, and the downside is so great. Do you know what happens when people trade? Or one or two things happens. It's like the guy, the kid that turns 21, goes to the casino and wins. No parent is happy for that kid. None. Because we all know. Oh, no. Didn't learn his lesson. Oh, no. If he just would have lost the first time, he'd have at least a better perception of what happens. Now he wins the first time. Oh, no. So if you're right, now you're a trading genius. And what happens is we have to do this over and over until you destroy thousands or millions of dollars worth of capital. And you won't even know because you're a genius. You won't learn. We're so good at deceiving ourselves at how good we are. So good. It's astounding how good we are at thinking, I think the market's pretty high, and then it goes down. Okay? Correct. It went down. How many times before that did that little thought go into your head? I think the market's pretty high. I think. And you don't act on it. Because you never act on it because you know better. You're smart. But then the one time you didn't act on it, because you shouldn't have acted on it, you didn't all the times before, but this time you know, like a bolt of lightning, that you are a trading guy. You get it. Dangerous. Just, you know, totally dangerous thoughts. Nothing wrong with harvesting gains of money you're going to need. And that's it. That's the whole process of income planning. Is trimming winners or taking money out of those positions that don't move down with markets or move down very little when markets are down. So you don't sell at a loss. You don't go to 100% cash because you read some article from some clown that's been negative for 40 years. And it's done nothing but destroy capital for people. It's not a hard game, but it is, because we want to play the game instead of just letting it come to us. It does come to us. Markets go to all-time highs over and over again. I have no idea if we're going to have a correction right here, right now. Did our whopping 1% move down this week? Is that the first one of a 10? Don't know. Completely irrelevant to all planning, because you shouldn't have been down the one if you needed the money in 3 months from now or within the next year. It's time to be out with that. Well, I'm on a, you know, I've got my pile and it provides income. Well, the dividends aren't changing. In fact, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, pretty easy bet since it happens 99% of the years, that your income will go up this year, regardless of price. Because the great corporations of the world raise their dividends over time at 3 times the rate of inflation. It happens over decades. It'll happen again this year. So your actual income from your portfolio will increase as you're fixing our eyeballs on the wrong thing, which is price. We do it all the time. It's an unnecessary dance, but it's a dance nonetheless that people do almost every day. Some do every day. They push the button. I wonder what my net worth is. Boop. Oh, there it is. Oh, that's terrible. Oh. Give me another whiskey. Oh, terrible. Terribly abusive to yourself, too. It has nothing to do with it. So we don't want to guess what the market's going to do. Stop it. It's really no point. Stop it. We'll talk more about this in the next hour. I got to take a quick break. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petzofinancial.com. .net, sorry. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, that's fine. It's dave@petzofinancial.net. All right, let's go ahead and run on over to the phones. I think we've got Jim in Middleton. Jim, if you're there, I can't hear you. All I hear is music.
Yeah, with all the music.
Jim, are you there?
Hello? Yeah. Hi, there was a bunch of music that was playing there.
I'm sorry about that. I don't know. I don't know. We're working on it. We'll get there.
Well, you're there. You're there.
I am. So thank you for your call. You go ahead, please.
Anyway, Dave, you know, I just wanted to share with you, you know, I've been doing a little amateur investigation on investing and different forms of it. You know, I'm mainly into real estate. I have a couple of 401ks, and I have two of the annuities that suck. And if I hope people that are on the fence listening will understand that the 7% that these people talk about is just a myth. You know, there's mm-hmm. 3 or 4 different categories of how you invest. You put your money in there, and you've got some hard money over here. If you want your money out, you're going to take a huge penalty. And then it shows on what they really want to fluff and puff is the area that's making 7%. And it is making 7%, but it's in a glass that you'll never see. Because when you turn the spigot on to get that money, the 7% goes away. Okay? So I talked to a couple of these guys. I said, all right, you guys are telling me you're going to get 7%. If I give you $500,000 right now, are you going to pay me 7%? They're tripping. Well, of course not. But we'll pay you 3%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's if the market goes up. That's all you get is 3. Yes.
Okay. So if I went down there right now with this money, I'd say, okay, hey, let's turn this on. They're not going to give you 7%. They're not going to give you 5%. So I just wanted to share this with you. Really look into this stuff. And they probably take your money and invest it in a Wall Street casino and give you peanuts while they're cashing in the rest of the money.
Right.
But it's pretty pathetic. You ask them a direct question, they're hiding under their desk. They will spit more ways than Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. They can put those two to shame. Pretty sad.
Yeah. They can and they do. The product is won't work. It can't work. And unfortunately, this is part of the discussion we've had all the time, and actually directly with the Department of Insurance, is why is it people are allowed to make false claims? Well, what do you mean? Well, they say you can get 7% and you can't. They even have it printed on their brochures. How is that okay? And I do know that they are looking at the advertising material. They obviously haven't done anything to make them not lie, you know, on radio and in person to you. By requiring, you know, as I said, if a person is a certified financial planner, you have to disclose facts. You can't just make them up. If you are a registered investment advisor, you have to do that. You have a fiduciary responsibility, actually. So you couldn't even use these products because they wouldn't meet the standard, because nobody in their right mind would buy a product like this.
Dave, ask a question.
That bad a product, unfortunately.
Okay, one thing that they are not lying about, they say that you'll have an income for life. Okay?
Right.
Well, I would like to say something. If you give me $1 million to invest, I will also give you an income for life. I'll give you $100 a month for the rest of your life. How does that sound? That's a slight exaggeration. But in a nutshell, that's kind of how this boils down. You know, I put a little bit of money in there, and I'm going to be okay and what have you. But it's just, you start asking some hard questions and get right down to the bottom line. These people they're slippery than a greased pig. But I wanted to share this with you, Dave. You know, I mean, we all know what the stock market's about. I'm not calling to plug you or what have you. You're pretty straight up, and you know, you invest wisely. You'll do good. And I've done well with 401ks and still invest in them. But I just wanted to share that. I did a lot of research. And then lastly, yeah, I want to share this. One of the guys I had annuity with. I had another one, and I had him look at that annuity, and he goes, "Oh, well, this annuity it's not paying what they told you and what have you." I said, "Oh, okay." So the bottom line is the annuity that I got from them paid less than the one he said sucked. Can you believe that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, stay away from that stuff. And
absolutely. Jim, thank you, and I appreciate all the information that you've gone to, and you clearly have done your homework. I don't run into very many people, Jim. Thank you again for your call. I don't run into very many people that have actually done what you've done, and that is to, as you said, you've done a lot of homework. Well, you really have. I you know, hats off to you. You actually seem to understand the product probably as well as most, if you will, investment people do. It's a very, very, very crooked game. It is very dishonest. It really is a shell game, and I am just so sorry that these things are allowed. I it's a complete injustice. It is totally immoral. I'm trying not to get wound up about this. But your homework was spot on. I thank you for bringing it up. But the big thing is the big lie that these things are, that they're going to pay 7%, and they're not. And just as you pointed out, $1 million into an account, let's use another number, because to get 7, I don't even know how you get 7, but I've run the numbers. And if you have something you're willing to set it aside for 10 years, because this is what many of them do, and they'll give you 7%, but let's pretend it's 7.2 just to make it our math easy, okay? So in 10 years, you put $100,000 into an account that's now going to be worth $200,000 in only one way. Only one way. That's income. They aren't going to hand you $200,000. Not at all. In fact, if they hand you anything, it'll be about a 2% interest rate, okay? So you've tied your money up for 10 years to get 2%. But you have the promise that they will pay you income for life typically around 5%. Unless you're very, very old, they might give you 6. So now on $200,000, say I get $10,000 a year. That's not bad. And, of course, in order to kind of add more insult to injury, they might even bring up, do you realize that's a 10% rate of return on your money that you first put in? Now, we're 10 years down the road. And so let's say you have, it's possible, I'm not going to even say likely, but let's say you do this and you're 65 years old, you're 75, and you draw income. If you live to be 95 years old, you will receive $200,000. Supposing you died when you're 85, you will have received half of that, your money back. 20 years it was tied up and your rate of return was how much? Zero. And you live to be 85 years old. Unbelievable. That's just not disclosed. Okay? So we got to be careful. All right, I got to go. I don't want to spend all day on this. There's many other alternatives if you're really that scared. Structured notes, all kinds of things, okay? All right, we got to take a break here when we come back. Great second hour plan for you. Great stuff. I hope you'll stick around. 580-KIDO. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. And, of course, as we always say, these are my opinions and my opinions only. And if we reference a stock, a bond, a sector, or something you should be thinking about or mention in a positive way, that doesn't mean you should be at all. We're here to learn and grow, not to tell you what to buy, 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 and sell, sell, sell. That's terrible noise. Leads you further from the truth. And it just doesn't really make any sense. It's not entertaining. It's stupid. And it is. So we don't want you to take anything out of context that you should do something. The only thing you shouldn't do is buy one of those stupid, stinking equity indexed annuities from one of those pips. That's all. Like we talked about with our last caller, do any amount of homework. These things are horrible. They're off the charts horrible. They can't even answer questions. Completely made up mathematics. At any rate, I wanted to finish one final thought regarding that. One and only one. When you're talking about a rate of return, if you were to live 20 years, drawing 5% income after it grew and doubled. You ready? So you put $100,000 in, you end up over the next 30 years taking out, because you wait 10 years, and then you get a lifetime of income. That's what the lifetime riders are about. Okay? And you die. So you manage to live for 30 years. And after you've tied up your money for 30 years, your rate of return is 3%. Three. If you live for 30 years. That's horrifying. If you're that bullish, go buy a 30-year treasury. Believe it or not, even today at the lowest interest rates of your life, we'll earn more than that. And are you ready? Your heirs will get the money too. And if you don't live for 30 years, you still get that and your heirs get the money. If you change your mind in 5 years, you could sell it. Can you do that with an annuity? No. They take you out and they yank your teeth out with penalties. It's terrible. Okay, that's all. Just wanted to give you the final mathematics there, okay? I realized I didn't. Listen, let me start this hour this way. We've been talking a lot about cash, and Mark in Meridian sent a great email this morning to really kick us off. I've talked a lot about all the cash sitting on the sidelines, all the cash that's out there. Why? Okay? And Mark has done his homework clearly, is citing an article here. I just want to give you a little background before I read the article. Or his question. We've talked about it a lot, that there's literally 12, 14 trillion, the number moves around there, but it's a lot of cash on the sidelines earning nothing in our country alone. There's an equal amount of money out there invested at negative interest rates, which is completely weird. here, if you'll take my money, I'll pay you to take my money. That's what negative interest rates are. Weird. Like, I don't get paid interest. I have to pay for somebody else to have my money. That's really weird. And I really hope our country never gets to that level. To me, it's frightening. It really is. That's how upside down the world is, especially over in Europe. So we've got these trillions and trillions of dollars. It's been my, if you will, my case that some of that money might make its way in the market, not all by any stretch. There's a lot of powder sitting on the sidelines for any kind of reinvestment somewhere. But that's only part of the equation, and I'll cover that after we read Mark's email. Read an article a couple of weeks ago that discussed the cash sitting on the sidelines issue. The writer posited that the level of cash on the sidelines can't go down because whenever someone uses some of it to buy a security, the seller of that security now has an additional amount of cash on the sidelines, right? So I sell to you. You have money. I just spent. All equal. Makes sense so far. Other than IPOs, which of course is nuke stock that hits the market where cash literally leaves my pocket and goes to the corporations, right? For their use. That seems like a sound argument. This would also seem to point to the cash in the sidelines number can't really be used as a data point for any useful purpose. A ratio of cash on the sidelines divided by total market capitalization might be meaningful. Thoughts? Mark, it's a good point, and maybe a different ratio would be better, okay? But I let me go back to the point of all that cash. Willingly earning nothing. That's a very strange thing. Now, in the old days, right, 20 years ago, we'd get paid, 3, 4, 5% on cash, meaning money markets. Right now, that number is at or near zero. That's a lot of money not earning anything, willingly not earning anything. Now, as a ratio, I would agree with you that a ratio is much more important, but let me give you the argument for why or what we're really addressing, and that's money flows. If you think of the world, and I do in this way, and because it just makes it easier for me, is like a giant bathtub of investment opportunities, money in this big world. It sloshes around. And basically, if you think of the bathtub kind of sort of having four corners to it, right? We've got cash. We've got stocks, equities. We've got bonds. And we've got real estate. I know others will argue, well, what about silver or whatever? Yeah, I know, because it's like a symbol in the ocean of the total market capitalization, okay? It's an irrelevant asset class that's babbled about all the time, but it is irrelevant. So let's try to keep this simple. Where does money go? It goes where it is thought to get the best returns. It goes where it is most welcomed. That's where it goes. So when people love real estate, we tend to have a little bit of a wave going over there. More money comes there, draining out of the other areas. When we have more money in stocks, when stocks are hot, then by natural tendency, the cash position will decline, seeking stocks. Bonds won't get as much flow, and real estate doesn't. It's not that there's a finite. I don't want to give you the impression, but at any moment, there is a finite amount. Not that we're not all growing. I don't want to. The world is infinite. I think it's the best way of thinking about it. It's abundant. We create more wealth all of the time. It's not a fixed thing. There are fixed investments. A buyer and a seller of commodities is a fixed and equal up or down. But all people can make money when stocks go up, when the market's going up, when the economy is growing and money is being created. So it is, in a sense, it's infinite and abundant. But in this illustration, at any particular moment, where we're putting that asset is fixed. So we have this, X trillions of dollars sloshing around in this bathtub. And all I'm arguing for is that why are we willingly and earning less than the rate of inflation. In other words, we're just taking dollar bills every year and burning them because of fear. Not because we're going to use it. We don't need that much cash on a day-to-day basis. And the reason why is more cash is coming in as dividends are paid, profits are paid in, real estate's earning its interest, what have you. Bonds are earning interest. It's paid into as cash ongoing. You may say, then I choose to reinvest it. That's fine. Those dollars then would show money flow back out and into stocks, for example, or back into real estate, as an example. But because this bathtub of water is moving around, it tells us by money flows where money's going. And it's moving around. And it's not something you want to take, even though money flows are shown week to week where money is going. And what's fascinating is when you look at it, you can see, you know, hot areas of the market, right? Because all of a sudden, biotech is getting a whole bunch of money coming in on the ETFs, right? Exchange-traded funds. We'll see the next week that maybe real estate's picking up a bunch. But when the trends continue for a long period of time, and this one has, there's something going on out there. When people talk about 2008, as I opened up last hour talking about, when we talk about and focus on something that happened more than 10 years ago, yeah, it sold out in 08. That's life-changing. The $500,000 you have in your 401k should be worth over $2 million. That's life-changing. That's a retirement that could happen that can't happen because it's only $500. So when we talk about that and we operate in fear, it's a very big problem we have. When we have $12 trillion, just to pick a number, earning nothing. It's an important thing to bear in mind. Not that that number shouldn't be, let's call it $8 trillion, right? That just the day-to-day uses and money's coming in. And as you point out, but I would just argue that the flaw of the argument is that cash is always stable and isn't going to be invested more. And it will as more money comes in. As an example, as if we are investing in stocks, ETFs now create themselves. They create even more, right? They buy more and more and more, driving prices up, up, up. So money sitting there earning nothing, to me, is still room to take a few trillion off, move it over into a productive investment, whether that be real estate or in somebody's mind, I don't like bonds, but hey, you know, who wants to invest for 30 years at, you know, 3.3? I don't, but it's better than an equity index annuity, right? So some people do. But those are the questions, and that's the why. Think about it as a big bathtub. At least I do. And anyway, it's a great question, and I really appreciate it. I would love to see the some ratios. And that brings up one other question. I want to kind of fly over here real quick. And that is when we talk about, because we had a good PMI, which is production managers, you know, blah, 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 okay, for industry. This is where we survey businesses and they say things are good or they say things are bad, okay? And a number over 50 indicates we're expanding and so on. And this number bounces around a lot. And it's nothing more than an opinion. In other words, I can tell you whatever opinion I have, but the reality is, I'll tell you how I really think by what I spend, right, as a business. So that's not that. It's just an opinion about where they think things are going. We had a good number yesterday. I think these things are irrelevant because they bounce around all the time. And further, it's just a survey of how people feel, not what's really happening. And when we also add to that the productivity, which we still are hearing people talk about, something's wrong with productivity gains. Something is really wrong. Because we haven't been gaining productivity for a long time, which would indicate we ought to have super high hyperinflation, but we don't. We don't. Something is wrong with the way we measure productivity. And I think as we examine it and we look at it as an example of any office out there, and I guess medicine's probably different because it's becoming probably less effective because of all the bureaucratic requirements and so on and so forth. But my point is every other business outside of that is going to look a lot like ours, where our business is up, like I'm you know, rounding it off and saying over the last 12 years, we're up 500-600%. Okay, a huge increase. And we don't have any more administrative staff than we did because technology has enabled all that. I would call that off the charts productivity gains, wouldn't you? Enabling us to reduce fees tremendously. Again, a huge driver and an anti-inflation thing, but it's not measured that way. And so I think we have a lot of things that I think economists and are looking at, financiers are looking at, and trying to ask these questions with technological gains, what really is the right productivity numbers and things like that. So anyway, great question. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. And a very valid point. Most all stock transactions are neutral. A buyer and a seller stays the same, but not all of them. And as we think about the bathtub more than the actual amounts of money moving around, that's why I think more money will find its way into productive investments. All right, we got to take a quick break. And when we do, I would love to hear from you. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome. Hey, I would love to hear from you. Let's give us a call, okay, at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Up here enjoying the McCall Winter Festival with thousands of my very bestest friends. But I was surprised. It was really a good drive up and not as many people. We'll see how it goes at today's parade. Of course, for them, we hope it's good. For the rest of us, we hope it's not too crowded and you know what I mean. It's nice to enjoy it. But it's beautiful. As we all know, the mountains are so beautiful this time of year. It's nice to be able to travel. So thank you for putting up with the little less quality sound and maybe some of the clunkiness of being live on a telephone on air. Okay, so I appreciate it. All right, hey, this is interesting, and I think it's important for us to think about with this coronavirus, right? You know, I don't blame the market for selling off. We have cases breaking out of this new unknown disease. It's unknown. Therefore, scarier than scary, right? The known isn't scary, even if it ought to be. But it is interesting as we look at the actual statistics and numbers, and the market did sell off on Friday, as we found out France had some. We have a couple cases here. And I don't, you know, this is real human life, so I'm not trying to dismiss it. What I'm trying to do is put it in a proper context. And if you will, it's very much like, in my mind, worrying about flying on an airplane and not in a car, right? So many more people are obviously hurt and killed in car crashes than planes. But here's the actual numbers of what's really going on in America and the world right now, because there is a very low, not talked about much, deadly, deadly disease. Much bigger, much more important. In the United States alone, so far this year, 39 children have died of this. 39. 6,600 total deaths. 6,600 have died in the United States alone. 650,000 around the world. It's a big number. And 5 million around the world have gotten severely sick. Now, again, not to take away that we're a little bit concerned of what's going on, but instead of numbers like 800 or 1,000 in China, you can't believe anything they say, double it. It doesn't matter. Have been sick. And a dozen, two dozen have died. In the United States, in a bad year, this illness will kill 61,000 people in the United States alone. And 5 million people globally are really, really sick. So if we talk about can't travel, the economy slows down, that's a big number. Not really a small number. But we've become comfortable with that number because it happens every year. every single year. Millions of people globally get severely sick. Severely sick. Hundreds of thousands globally die of the flu. We become comfortable with the death of hundreds of thousands of people, but this new thing that scares us to death is a bigger problem. This to me, it has very vast questions of human nature. I don't know where this virus is going. I do know when we worried about SARS, which was pretty serious. Swine flu. We worry about Ebola. I've mentioned this before, where I've seen well-known commentators put their hand on their head and lean into the desk and say, till this is solved, nothing good can happen. Obviously, that exactly, probably to the minute, marked the exact bottom of a little 2% Ebola correction. But it is the unknown that we get afraid of. Not the known. It doesn't seem remarkable that we just simply accept that there'll be 650,000 people or more killed this year from the flu. That's okay. That's totally okay. But it doesn't move markets or anything. But the idea that there's a virus that we haven't figured it out yet that's killed a couple dozen people is the end of our economic boom. It's the fear of the unknown. What we know isn't afraid. We're not afraid of, even if it is much more dangerous. Pretty normal human nature. I don't know what's going to happen with this. I suspect it's what we've seen before. And that is that it will be contained. It's not going to kill half the population of the world or anything near that. It won't stop, but temporarily travel as it should. We don't know what this is. You don't let it out. Try to contain it the best you can. That's smart. But that's not going to be devastating to the global economy. It's a very temporary thing. But that's what I suspect. But we did have a reaction this week, so I think it warrants comment, as well as recognizing how odd it is that we really don't talk about the flu and how devastating it really is, especially when something new has come along. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We need to take a break for Fox News at the bottom of the hour here. And when we come back, please do give us a call. It's also, if you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. Please do give us a call. Ring us up. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. I appreciate it. And once again, thank you for putting up with me being on the phone this week. Allows me to travel, see the same things that many of you enjoy, right, at various times. And it's been years, probably 20 years since I've been up to the McCall Winter Festival, looking forward to it with our friends and just enjoying this winter wonderland. It's really a nice, obviously, I'm very fortunate on the weather. It's beautiful, and still you can travel it, so it's good. Anyway, you didn't tune in for that. Let's give our number one more time here before we go to Terry. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petsofinancial.net if you prefer email. Remember the .net part, okay? And let's go ahead and go to Terry. Terry, thank you for calling. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, it sounded like when you first opened up that you were just pointing right at me and rubbing it in about how I've spent the last 20 years investing poorly.
Oh, no, that's all of us. We have to learn together and grow. We just got to get better at it, right?
But I can't
regret the last 30 years that you haven't invested. We just got to move forward, you betcha. But yes, hopefully we're all learning as we're going.
Yeah, well, what I want you to do, since you're up there in the high country, is go ahead and find the deep-fried chorizo booth and have one for me.
I made those at the fair one time. I'm trying to think of what organization it was, right, where you crawl in the back of one of those little, things that's like 95 degrees at the middle of the fair, and you're throwing these things in the deep fat fryer, and it really doesn't make you love them the rest of your life. Just saying.
Oh, well, okay, sorry you got ruined, but I have fond memories when I was up there.
Absolutely, you bet. Of course, and that's the fun thing about something like this, isn't it? It does. I digress totally here, but these are the kind of things that I just remember my grandparents about, and my mom, where they would just seek out things like that to take the family to go to. It just, those are the things that, isn't that great? That's the nice thing about, like, going to a parade or something like that. It's, it's hokey, it's whatever, but it brings back all that, all those old thoughts, of a kid. It's Americana,
Well, to bring it back home, that's why we invest.
You're right. It's true. There you go. Thanks for bringing it home. I appreciate it.
What I called about, though, and the other thing you were going, I had a quote from Mark Twain that popped into my pea brain when I listened to you.
One of my favorites. Go ahead.
It's not the things I don't know that get me in trouble. It's the things that I know that just aren't true.
That's good. That's good. I have heard that one before. I've seen it or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That's good. That's
here,
good.
I'm gonna take my money out of the market because I know how this is gonna end up.
Right. It's true. We all have opportunities of continuing our life and doing that, repeating it over and over. I think it was Einstein. Anyway, it was Einstein that either said it or was gave the credit for it. Or discredit, either way, however you perceive it. But doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results is the definition of insanity.
Yeah.
And how often in investments we do that, it is astounding to me. It's astounding how we as human beings can try very hard not to learn. It is amazing. It really is. At certain things. I'm saying we all have our blind spots. Don't get me wrong. But we have blind spots that we don't learn. In certain areas. And investing seems to capture a lot of us of not learning and moving forward. So that is an area that we don't use a whole lot of our, we don't accept how wrong we are or that we cannot divine the future accurately at all, and we just need to step aside and let it happen.
Right. And one of my podcasts I listened to, a fellow named Jack Spirko, says that what has that done to change the temperature of the water in my pool?
Right.
So, but I tell you what, you were talking about the coronavirus, too.
Yeah.
Until this begins to approach the 1917 flu pandemic, as far as the millions of people that it kills, it's not going to be at the top of my worry list.
Right. Exactly. And it shouldn't be. But we did see that reaction. And I do not like attributing stuff to market reaction because that's overstated every day. Oil prices up, causing market to this. Oil prices down, causing the market to that. That's just nonsense. It's that we make stuff up most days. But you clearly saw with every announcement of this virus, the market ticking down. I think predominantly because we headed into the weekend, right? Now you got two or three days to sit around and wait for thousands more to get sick, and they might. And so people just said, I'm going to rest. I'm going to the sidelines. And I don't blame them. But it was a very small reaction when you think about it. 1%,
the other side of that is, do you trust the numbers coming out of China?
Correct. Exactly, which is the other reason you can't. That's exactly right.
What really
triggered it was the extra case in America and the case in France. So,
right. It's the dog chasing its tail.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Anyway,
sure.
Well, I got to go, Professor. You have fun.
And I appreciate your call. Thank you. Have a great day.
Same to you, sir. Good day.
Thanks. Good day. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. You know, it is very, very interesting as we look at our worries, day to day, how things have transpired. When we get caught up in those worries, I'm going to go back to what we talked about at the very top of today's show. And that is, we sit around and try to divine a future, especially when things get rocky. And we make errors often that are beyond tragic. They have really measured consequences. People have been wiped out because they don't do the right things investment-wise, right? We chase after real estate because we can get loans on stupid situations that we shouldn't do. I have known very, very, very smart people that are smart in other ways file bankruptcy during the 2008. Now, it's easy to turn around and blame, Goldman Sachs or whoever you want to blame for taking out a liar loan or a negative amortization loan. But we took those out. And so the point I want to make is this isn't just on the fear side. It's on the greed side. And even in smaller ways, we see this year to year. Oh, we got to get, the pot stocks are really hot right now. What kind of pot stocks are you buying? Or when the market's doing well and lots of IPOs come out, like Snap this or Snap that or Uber this, Lyft that. And people want to jump on board because, once there was this company called Microsoft or Google that goes to the moon. But you see, we don't have to do that. You don't have to chase. Microsoft and Google gave you lots of opportunities to make lots and lots of money. You don't have to chase. But the only way you make lots and lots and lots and lots of money, the only reason that Apple is a 10-bagger in my portfolio is because I owned it. I didn't trade it. And we missed that. And Peter Lynch talked about it all the time, that you have to have some 10-baggers in your life to have really good results. But we try to divine the future. It's like, is the market high? I don't know. And so on the fear side, 2008 was so, it was fearful. It was different. It was tough. And yet it's the same. They're all different, but they're all the same. I know, since I'm talking like a politician, right? No. I'm basically quoting a genius, John Templeton. The most dangerous words in investing are, this time it's different. He also said, every time is different. It's that tenuous thing that we have, right? Where it is different every time because there's different people, different technologies. The world is different. We need to think about it, but not try to divine what's coming. Other than you get money in front of trends broadly. Is 5G coming? Yes. Then get some money in front of it. What does that look like? Who's going to win? I don't know. They've got ETFs for that. What about genetics? Looks like a big area to me. How about artificial intelligence? Robotics? See, we're not chasing pot stocks. This is a cataclysmic shift. 3D printing, all these things. Who's going to win? I don't know. I don't need to know. I need money in front of that area. Not all of the money. Some. That's all the divining of the future we ought to be doing. Not our stocks too high. Do you think the PE ratios are too high? What do you think is going to happen in the impeachment trial? I don't know. What about this? What about that? How's that going to affect? I don't know. What about coronavirus? I don't know. I do know when you have a coronavirus that all of a sudden AI, robotic, genetic, cybersecurity stocks go down, making them less expensive to own. That must be a terrible thing. No, it's not a terrible thing. It's an okay thing. But we do overreact to these things on a day-to-day basis. We do. Don't let that happen. And remember, we can do it on a greedy side. We do it on the fear side. The only reason anybody would go to an equity indexed annuity pimp, because everybody knows better. You don't get market returns with no risk. You get crap with no risk. And they get a very high commission, and we all know that. You only go there for fear. Fear of the unknown. All of life is unknown. The only known there is there is you can't get out. That there's going to be a massive commission, and the insurance company is going to make money, all at your expense. Period. That's what you know. Maybe sometimes we just have to accept that we don't know what's coming. But we can't be driven by fear or greed when we make investment decisions. Bad idea. All right, our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome, and thank you again for joining us today. Appreciate it. If you have any comments, questions, please, during the week, just shoot those over to PetsoFinancial.com. We also have podcasts there and articles and calculators to help you with your own financial planning. Right now, if you have a call, I would love to, you know, a question. I'd love to hear from you. We've got plenty of time left in today's program to answer those. I wanted to touch on a couple of things as we, you know, that you just kind of hear bantered around out there. And it is amazing. And I've talked a lot about some of the lessons from 2019, right, of what happens out there all the time. And we have to bear in mind during these periods of any kind of market instability or virus that's coming out, and the market's not unstable. I mean, we're down 1%. That's not exactly unstable. Don't get me wrong. But when you hear people talking down what's going on out there, and you will, this is the political season. You see article after article, if you will, and anybody can write an article and throw it out there. It's just, it's a mess. I happen to have a Yahoo email personally, right? And so I go through Yahoo, and it's absolutely nothing but negative article after negative article on everything, whether it's the economy, which is really, quotes, Trump, or it's Trump, it's negative, right? Here's what's really going on out there and why the economy is really not as good as people think. These are the kind of things that play for, I guess, some kind of thought. And it's really quite stupid. It's quite misleading, and it is politically biased. But it's still, we hear it. You know what I mean? Our brains still hear it. We still hear it. And that's problematic for sure, that our brains would hear that. But it goes on, and the reality is, it's never been better. And that's one of the lessons from 2019 that I think is really important. It's never been better. That's not just a wild-eyed optimist, you know, and maybe your personal life has been better, right? Maybe you had a big personal relationship breakup. I get it. But that isn't the economy. Maybe your job isn't as good as you want it to be. That's actually pretty rare today. But to you personally, that's the personal truth of your life. But it isn't the truth of our economy. They can wish it to not be so, and they do. They hate the idea of Donald Trump. They want him gone. Some people want a socialist part 185. We're going to try it one more time. Never worked, but the 186th time it's going to work. Not sure what people are learning in school, but that's where we're at, and it feels scary. Always does. But what we need to do is understand sometimes, just take a step back. Say, well, our stock's high. I just read this article. They're really, really, really high. Okay. Based on what? How many thousands of points have we heard this? how many dozens of percent ago were you out of the market because you worried that fill in the blank? A lot. And as we've been discussing today, when you miss it, you miss a lot. And the only way you can win the game is you have to be in the game. You have to. There is no such thing as getting market participation with no risk. Warren Buffett didn't say, don't lose money. Because Warren Buffett had lost lots of money. That's what happens. But if you grab a quote out of context, perfect, run with it. Because all you have to sell is lies anyway. Fear and deception. It's the only thing you have. I just don't know why. There's so much money out there. I just don't know why people do this, but they do. I don't know why the state allows it, but they do. And it takes us away. So if we look back at 19 and say, this is a great thing, period, then we don't live in fear of it being too high. This is just a good thing. Why are stocks so high? How about because the economy has never been better? Our GDP has never been higher. Oh, there's a coming recession. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know, J.P. Morgan and all the others chasing around. Because they're out of New York, and everybody in New York hates Trump. They're wishing for a recession. Listen to where the comments are coming from. And why do they need to predict a recession that isn't here? I don't know. Why are we trying to be heroes about this? The world will exist. It's crazy what people try to do and divine about the future. How about we just look at what's going on? The lowest unemployment rate, when we look at U6, which is the unemployed, the underemployed, people that have given up, it's the lowest it's ever been. Yes, they have started measuring it in 1994. I'll take it anyway. And then we have to go clear back to 1961 to find an unemployment rate in general that's this low. I'll take that. How about the lowest unemployment rate for women, blacks, and Hispanics? Huh? Lowest ever. Is that a good thing? I don't know. I don't know if the economy's really growing. Is that as good as Trump said? That is good. Oh, for crying out loud. Get off your political horse. It hurts us to be even thinking about this and hearing it again. Trillions of dollars on the sideline earning nothing. Lots of people got out in 08. They're still out. Because all they do is they sit there and listen to all of what's wrong. And we just got to stop. Turn the daggone box off. Just shut it down for a couple of days. You know how much you'll miss? Nothing. At least take a weekend for crying out loud and turn it off. I know people are always surprised, like, oh, did you hear about this over the weekend? No, didn't hear about it. Of course I have to know. I'll get a bulletin if a bomb is dropped somewhere. But I don't need to sit and listen to this negativity and grind over it all weekend. Why does it give me any clarity at all? None. And it isn't going to help you. None. Well, GDP isn't really. I mean, just keep making stuff up. Why is the market high? Because corporate profits have never been better. Yeah, but they're not growing as fast as they were. I know. It's always the comma but. How we see the world. It's abundant or it's finite. It's amazing. So what we're saying right here, I think we need a wealth tax. We need to kill all the billionaires. We need to put them all in a concentration camp, a re-education place. We need to make them build dams and dig ditches. That'll show them. Well, they became a billionaire because, you dig the iPhone. Or you like your little Facebook thing. You like to do selfies and post them out there. You want to be in contact with, what did they do? Did they just run and steal your money? We act like it's finite. Like if they have a billion, I can't have a few million. It's not finite. It's abundant. You can go make your billion. Just find something that maybe I and a billion other people want to buy. Make my life better. Then you become a billionaire. Instead of just, you know, you see, we would do this, and we do this constantly. Well, people aren't really. You know what? The wages are growing the fastest at the lowest levels. When's the last time you hired a craftsman? Huh? If you haven't, try. See if they'll actually give you a bid. Maybe they'll show up. They're so busy. Had my sprinklers done, I couldn't believe last summer. Can't believe how much the price has gone up for like it over the last 3 years. Why? Demand. Always. That's what we want to learn, these lessons of what's really happening. Take a step back. Don't listen to the noise. Trust your own eyes, what you see. And don't always say, comma, but. Sometimes it's just period. It's good. Thanks for joining us, everybody, and I hope you have a great weekend. Look forward to talking to you next week.